Hello, you're listening to FlixWise Canada. I'm Martin Kessler, and today I'm joined by Leanne Kubich. You've been a film writer for Pink Smoke, and you've been on Wrong Reel podcast and Zebras in America. I also know you from your nail polish company, the 1898 House,
yes, which
I like because it has a little bat on it, and I love bats, so that's great.
Do you have a bat house?
I do. I have a bat house. Not here in the city, but at my parents' place. I have a bat house. I do bat conservation work. So
that's fantastic. Because we have
bats. But
yes, we have a bat house in our backyard here in Kansas City. Because in the city there are bats. So yeah, I'm so happy that you're a bat conservationist. That's why we have a little bat on our nail lacquer bottle, because we like our bats so much.
That's fantastic. And today we're here to discuss a trilogy of films about stunts, gags, and pranks performed with reckless abandon, the Jackass trilogy. I'm curious how you first were introduced to the Jackass movies, or if you were introduced through the show. Or
okay, so definitely the show. It was on MTV, I believe it was Sunday nights. And I was in college at the time, and everybody, you know, would try to watch it if anybody had a TV or cable, as college students tend to not have TVs. So yeah, that was absolutely like very popular. And then the movie came out in 2002, and I went to go see it. And at the time, I was in graduate school for media studies to be a film critic. And I told my graduate advisor, and he flipped out on me, basically because I was the grad assistant, so I'm supposed to be the best in the class and all that stuff. And he was like, "I'm disappointed in you. That's not even a movie. It's not a documentary. It's just a bunch of guys doing stuff. And how could you, you know?" So it was this whole diatribe, and it's one of those conversations you remember like the rest of your life, because I respected him so much and he taught me everything I know. And but yet he was vehemently against the idea of having this as a film, as a motion picture. And I was like, "But it was so much fun and it's really funny." And he didn't care. So that's where I came into it. And I've been thinking about it like for that since that. But how is this? It's so popular and there's actually a lot of value to it. So that's where I've been thinking about it since then.
I'm glad. I think that idea of taking a deeper look at it, I found very exciting when you first pitched it. And it's not the first film on the podcast that's had accusations of not being a movie thrown at it. I know Airplane also was accused of not being a movie. So it's interesting because, like you said, they don't quite follow that format of documentary. It's sort of this other thing. How would you describe what these films are?
It's sort of an interesting showcase of, well, it's always bookended. Each film is bookended with a very spectacular, like either dance scene or some sort of spectacular scene. And then in the middle, it's just snippets of quick pranks or stunts. Like the stunts are usually very quick, maybe 30 seconds a minute. And then the pranks can go on for longer, 10 minutes. And it's just that, with maybe a few montage scenes here and there. But that's the entire film. Mm-hmm. It's a genre unto itself that has maybe become a genre now, like on YouTube and stuff.
Right.
With all of the people, other than this generation, the people now who have access to YouTube and, you know, cheap cameras, things like that. So they're putting it in that regard, but not on TV anymore or in movies.
Right. It's interesting, too, just how stunts and gags are edited together. Like, it seems like there's a definite structure to it, not in like a narrative structure sense, but like the way it builds up to certain gags, the way it kind of gives you a moment to breathe between some of the bigger ones. You know, I think they know that some are stronger than others. So, like, there is kind of a progression to it. And like the thing that I thought it kind of resembles is maybe a concert movie, you know, how there's some songs you like more, some songs you like less. Like, you know, it feels like a good album that's kind of put together, and it's sort of that kind of an experience where not everything's going to make you laugh, I think, throughout the film, but you're always going to enjoy yourself, partly just because you feel like you're experiencing something with a group of people, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. No, because seeing it in the theaters, I don't know if you got to see it in the theaters when it first came out, but it was so much fun. Such a great experience.
The only one I've seen in the theaters is the third one, which I lucked out because it's all in 3D. So after, I don't know how easy it is to find in 3D now, and I don't have a 3D TV. So like, that's one of the few films I actually enjoyed seeing in 3D. don't know, we can get into that a little bit later, but I think I just like I was aware of them and I'd seen one and two when they were on video, but I think I got into them just like a little bit later towards the end, like also when I was in university and you know, at the age when they say you're supposed to be growing out of this sort of
I'll
stuff.
never grow out of it. I love
No.
stupid humor. It's,
Me too. I mean, it was fun. Like I was rewatching these kind of in conjunction with some of the old Tom Green stuff
Oh,
when he was still
lovely.
in Canada, and it was sort of interesting to see how they were similar or how they were different, especially because Tom Green, it's just one person. But like a lot of the gags Tom Green would perform, you know, for instance, on his parents, it's a little bit like the gags where Bam was pranking his parents or things like that, you know. So it was interesting to see that. And then I thought it was interesting to maybe compare it to when Tom Green kind of got his own film with the Freddy Got Fingered, which the Zebras in America podcast gets its name from, like how that kind of felt as if they had to put him into some kind of a structure. And that whole film is him rebelling against that structure or making fun of that structure, you know. And I think it's kind of good that the Jackass movies, they didn't try to force it into some kind of a narrative, like, oh, the Jackass crew has to go across the country to do this and they're on an adventure, and like just put a loose script in. Like I feel like that might have actually gotten in the way of things. Or, you know, there's a few of these films when they adapt something like that from a television to a film, sometimes it seems like they assume that there's a need to force it into more of like a traditional film narrative structure in some way. Like that's kind of what they did with the Dirty Grandpa spin-off movie,
Yes.
but I'm not sure if I like that as much.
Right. And then, but then also Johnny Knoxville has his few narrative films. There's The Ringer.
Yes.
And then also the one that just came out and I missed, Action Point.
Right, with like all the pranks and the, or not pranks, but it's like stunts in this amusement park that's falling apart. Yeah.
It's about Action Park in New Jersey, but they changed the name. And
Notoriously dangerous action
we used to call it Lawsuit Park, actually,
park.
because it was that dangerous. So yeah, so that was only in the theaters for 2 weeks, unfortunately, and I was really kind of looking forward to that, missed it. So, but that's the thing. It seems like now where he's a like older, because he's in his late 40s, that he's realizing like, okay, I can still do pranks, but I'm gonna have to do them with other people, and maybe not like they can't do what they're doing in these movies, because even
Yeah.
Jackass 3D was what years? That's like 10 years ago. So they can't do what they're doing then now. They fall apart. So
Yeah, I think even by the third film, you can kind of like it's still good and funny, but it feels
absolutely.
like, you know, they have kids, they have, you know, they're starting to get like a little bit older. Like all of a sudden, it feels like, you know, I'm not sure if I want to see a guy with kids like fall off a Christmas tree or like you know what I mean? Like it starts to feel a little bit less, all fun and games when they get to a certain age, which you kind of want to see them move on to other stuff at a certain point.
Oh yeah.
And Johnny Knoxville, especially, like he's, you can tell why he's kind of the ringleader or focal point of the group, because he has that, you know, little bit movie star charisma. You know, he's the guy who can get run over by a bull and still find something clever to say. He's always got some kind of a quip, or like sometimes that makes it funnier than the stunt itself. You know, I think it's in the third one when he gets his ass chomped on by a dog, which,
Yes.
you know, whatever. And then the following scene is the medic attending to his ass, and he says, "Can you tell I've been doing squats?" You know, it's a very clever thing to say while you're all torn up and have a medic looking at you. And like, I think that quality is kind of what maybe sets him a little bit at the forefront of the group.
Right. And he has that kind of, he's tall, he's handsome, and even though he's done all those stunts, he's like not, his face is still intact and everything. And actually, when you think about like every person in the group, they're all actually a pretty good looking bunch of guys all around. They're not ugly or weird looking or anything like that. So that helps also the fact that they're good looking, they're affable, generally speaking. Not all of them are happy, but they're generally,
Right.
some are on happier, levels than others. But yeah, Johnny Knoxville is very good at being a host. It seems like he can do things under pressure. you
Yeah,
know?
exactly. Like, you know, there's a reason why he's the one that puts his hand in a bear trap right before they have to do this big musical number where you can't mess anything up, you know, because they know that he can go through with that and not miss a beat. You know, it seems like that's kind of what makes him a little bit special. You know, they all have different strengths, it seems like, but I think that's kind of the thing that I noticed most about him, and that sort of earnestness he can put on, you know, like I like when John Waters shows up in the second one and he's like, "Oh, geez, John, like you're the best magician ever," and he sounds so like aw shucks earnest, or you know, like he has that kind of enthusiasm that makes you sort of enthusiastic when you're watching these films. You know, he makes it fun even if you're watching something that could be potentially painful or dangerous, or like there's that one stunt where he's supposed to be riding a rocket and it explodes outwards, like incredibly dangerous. He sort of looks at it and says, "Oh, if that was a few inches closer, that would have been curtains for old Knoxville," or something like that, and laughs it off. And that's a big part of these films too. It's finding the levity in that, and it's interesting. I don't know if you've seen any of the like Jackass 2.5 or 3.5. I got like all the extras on the DVD, and they're sort of composed of the additional footage or like stunts that didn't necessarily land or work.
I saw 2.5 at some point in the past, but not recently, unfortunately, but
You know, you're looking basically at raw footage, and a lot of the times it can be just kind of uncomfortable to see, you know, stuff not always working out, or you know, not at their best.
when you look at the credits and how they put under each credit sequence at the end, they put all of those stunts, and those are like different stunts. They're not just blooper reels, and you're thinking, wow, like somebody did this huge stunt and it's getting put under the credits. So it worked partially well. It was like good enough, but not good enough to be in the main film, but at least they put it in there. So it's like, wow. I mean, the amount of footage they must have, the editing process must be a nightmare, an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, I'm not even sure how you go about it. I guess some they probably know for sure are going to go in. They seem to plan it that way. You know, that's, "Oh, this is the end of the film" kind of gag, or, "Oh, this is going to be the best gag in the film." They kind of know it sometimes, but you know, there's a lot of leeway in what's going to turn out or not, it seems like, what's going to get a reaction out of people. Like, you know, again, like the dirty grandpa type sketches, there's like a few different variations of those, but like a lot of the times the reactions they get out of people aren't necessarily that funny. If you go through deleted scenes and raw footage, like the most common reaction you get is just, you know, confusion, shrugging confusion, you know, but once in a while you get like a really amazing reaction, and that's of course going to make it into the film. Like the jewel heist
Oh my
sketch that
gosh,
comes near the end of the
yes.
first movie, like what makes that great is just the one guy who runs without missing a beat right out of the building and just keeps running. You know, that's the kind of reaction you hope for when you do one of those sketches that depends on how average people are going to react to them. But
Well, that's an amazing sketch too, because
yep.
there's so much going on with that one where there's the guy. I mean, he's running away. He's, you know, he's all freaked out. He's all running away. And then you think, like, nowadays we could never do something like that. Somebody would call the FBI or the cops, or God forbid they would have a gun on them, they'd shoot them. I mean, if that something like that would be completely off limits in this day and age. So it's very interesting that that was made in 2002, came out, so let's think 2001. And how, I mean, and it's a very funny skit. I mean, the fact that they're bumbling jewel thieves, and then they're like, oh no,
Get
we messed up. I
the
mean, that's
diamonds,
hilarious. But then the fact that one guy, and he was smart, he was the smartest person, because he just got out, he got safe. So, but you think, like, nowadays, if they would be sued for like psychological trauma, and
Probably.
you know, by the people who worked in the office. But I mean, it worked out really, really well, and they're lucky that, see, that's the thing, it's interesting, it's only been 15, 16 years, but there's a lot of skits that they couldn't do now, or wouldn't be appropriate, or even really weren't appropriate at the time. But so, yeah, you know, like there's a few, like the like, so like the night pandas thing,
Yeah,
which,
that one hasn't held up as well, but
it's cutesy, because then when they finally meet up with the men who are doing like exercise group outside, and they play with them. Like, so they kind of interact with people, but it's very much like, okay, first of all, there aren't pandas and Japan.
Right.
Okay. So like, that's like, you know, cultural appropriation. That's incorrect. And then you're just messing around with a bunch of people in Japan just because you can, you know, so it's like, that's not. And
I mean, that's funny too, because that felt like one of the more harmless sketches at the time. Like that was one of the well-intentioned ones. And now looking back, that's one of the ones where you say, oh, they probably couldn't do this today. So yeah, no, that's a really interesting point.
And also the end of Jackass 2, which I think is the reason that Jackass 2 always had really, really bad taste in my mouth. That's the one I always kind of avoid watching, is that sketch with Aaron where he's going to be a terrorist, quote unquote.
Right.
And then they switch where he's going to prank a taxi driver, and then they prank him with a taxi driver's an actor, and then he puts him in the
trunk
of the car, and the whole thing is like really, really racist.
Yeah.
And it's psychological trauma. It's just it's like layers of bad all on top of each other.
That one's very, very layered, and it seems like the whole punchline of putting the pubes on as the fake beard almost feels like an out, because they kind of know, like, something about this isn't working.
Yeah. And even that is really gross, because they put, like, they have somebody with crabs, and it's like, dude, like, that's
gross.
That's a disease.
Yeah.
Like, you don't do that to somebody.
Well, and Aaron McGeehy, he's getting into his character, and, like, I forget who says it, but somebody says, oh, like, it's a joke about racism, or like they use that kind of an excuse for him to feel okay about doing this character, which, like, it's just, you know, sort of top to bottom in bad taste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that one, I was like, I think that's why, like, it's always been in my mind that this is, it was like humiliation. And Aaron always seems to be the one who gets the worst of all of them. I don't know. It's like him and Dave are the two guys who do like, the really, really, really gross, like, you know, fecal sort of or urine or whatever. They tend to be the ones who do those.
It's something to do with his ass, yeah. Or I think it's the third one when they pull out Aaron's tooth.
Yes.
I guess he had
with
to, like,
a Lamborghini. Yeah.
Oh, it's beautifully shot in slow motion.
Yes.
But it's so painful to watch. And, like, he can't even think of something to say after they said, oh, how painful is it? And he just is at a loss for words. You know, it looks so awful. Sometimes Bam gets it pretty hard, but that one feels less bad because he's kind of provocateur for most of the films. You know, he's the one who will close the door on Dunn when he's in the shopping cart riding out, and you sort of think, oh, what a dick. So when they, you know, lock him in a pen with a cobra or drop him in a pit full of snakes, you know, which, like, he's really terrified, and it's like probably some of the more mean-spirited things that they do, it doesn't feel as bad as maybe, you know, if they had done something similar to another member of the group, because you sort of feel like, like maybe he's kind of had it coming a little bit, or
yeah,
I don't know how you feel about those.
He's an instigator. Yeah. He's definitely an instigator, and you know, he's fairly bratty, but that's also because he's around his parents, so you get the people around their parents, and he's doing bratty stuff. But there's like one point where the only time I really feel bad for him is Jackass 2. There's a like the ballistic, not the riot control test.
When he doesn't want to do it,
right? He doesn't want to do it, and they're like, do it, and they do it, and they all get shot by those projectile things.
Yeah.
And he is like, and of course you're going to be hurt. And we've seen over the past several years with how protests have been happening and these things have been deployed on civilians. So we know how bad it is. And Johnny Knoxville's like, okay, he's like, oh, it hurts. But he's like, get up, like, whatever, man. And it's like, okay, that's not very nice. Like, that was one time where I was like, you're being really mean and you've done this kind of crap a bunch of times. And he hasn't. And it's also like, let him, it hurts. It went right in it. I mean, my God. So that was the only time I really felt bad for Bam. But Bam's a very interesting one with his family and the dynamics. And it's somewhat uncomfortable, the familial dynamics.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's his family. So I don't want to talk bad about his family. It's like, these are real people. But it's like, it seems like really lenient, the crap they let him get away with as an adult, which is like out of control. But then you're also thinking they're making money off of this, right? Because they had reality shows after the you know, the movies outside and on TV, so they're like part of this. But it's like really disrespectful and strange, and just I don't know. And even now, I mean, right in present day, he's not doing very well, apparently, in life. He's having a lot of, you know, he's trying to get sober, that sort of stuff. And even his parents are like, oh, we're trying to get him to get better. But it's like, I don't know. It's just, it's a very weird family dynamic. It's almost like, did they enable him to be this crazy because they're all in on the business too?
Right. Because it's not anyone else's parents who show up on the show. And like, it's, you know, that seems like a pretty strong boundary for most people. You know, you wouldn't necessarily want to do what he does to his family. And like, most of the time they seem pretty okay with it afterwards. You know, even like, I mean, there's one part where they swap out his father at night with Preston with the fake beard. And like, you know, his mom, after, she sort of laughs it off and she gets in on it. But I was thinking, like, I wouldn't want that to happen to me if, you know, if that was my kid doing that, or, you know, like somebody pulling that kind of a prank on me. But
the alligator,
you know, they seem to be...
The alligator. I mean, that, they never really explicitly say it, but I'm assuming that alligator must have been tranquilized in some way, because I'm thinking alligators walk really slow, and when they attack, they just go from, like, you know, 0 to 60. So that thing could have eaten her if it wasn't, you know, tranquilized in some fashion. So I'm like, I don't know. That's incredibly dangerous. Like, your mom could have been eaten by an alligator. Oh my God.
It's also the, like, the rudeness.
Yes.
There's the one part when Bam gets the brand on his ass of the dick.
Yes. Ouch.
And it's like, he says it's like a hologram dick, cause there's like three over. it didn't quite land. But then, you know, when he shows his mom, she said, you know, oh, that's permanent. You know, she's worried about him. And the way he says, you know, no shit to her, like, it's really like, it's like, oh, you're stupid for saying that. Like, I couldn't think of talking to my mother like that, or, you know, anyone, you know, sort of speaking in that way. And when you call somebody a jackass, just like in life, you know, it usually means, like, you know, they have this sort of disregard for themselves or others, that, like, oh, you know, you look at him and the way he acts, you say, oh, what a jackass. I sort of feel that way just looking at the way he behaves, you know, like, he is a jackass in the films anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the one part where he sets the fireworks off in the bedroom, that part is funny because, like, that one is funny because of the second act, where he sets off fireworks, oh my gosh, I wake my dad up, then he sets him off in his van. That's where the punchline is. That's when it's funny. But that whole part is like, okay, it's really messed up, but I laughed at that. I was like, that's really funny. But when he goes and he beats up his dad when he's sitting on the toilet, I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, it's,
I know.
But also, it's very interesting when you think about his family and the lack of women in Jackass. Like, in the entire three films, Bam's mom is in each one, so there's one woman.
Yeah.
And, like, that's it. Okay, the first film, there's the kickboxer champion.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's
and
one woman.
Once in a while, you hear, like, a voice from behind the camera.
Right,
or like
there's a PA
person,
or,
like,
something. Yeah.
You know, that's about it. But, like, as in terms of the group of people,
there are no women. But yet, it's not misogynistic. They don't make... I mean, okay, you could say, like, Spike Jonze's elderly woman...
Yeah.
You know, but that's pretty funny. And I mean, it's not like he's making fun of women, but it's more like an eccentric old woman caricature. So overall, you could say that's, like, against elders in general. But yeah, like, there's no women, but yet these guys don't make fun of women. They're not disrespectful in any way, shape, or form. It's such an interesting world where women don't exist, but they're also not treated like crap in, like, so, wow, what a world. Like, I don't see myself in it, but I don't feel excluded from it either.
Well, if there was a woman in the group, do you think that would change the dynamic?
Well,
or
how
would you feel about that?
I saw, like, the Jim Rose Circus Sideshow back in the 90s once. And there were a few women who did, like, you know, circus, like, this kind of stuff, stunts and things. And it was pretty cool. But I've noticed just in my life, like, these guys are doing it. Some of them were, you know, stunts. People like Steve-O was a circus performer, that kind of thing. So they did it as a semi-professional thing, but also they just kind of did it in their own lives. What I've noticed, just me being a woman, but and also the same generation, women didn't tend to do stuff like that. I've never seen a woman do some crazy stuff like that. I don't know why. They all, I mean, it brings things of a very crazy, of a sort of a random statistic, but they say that women, when they commit suicide, tend to take pills instead of shooting themselves because they don't want to leave a bad corpse. So maybe that has something to do with women's just self-preservation of our bodies. Like, it's an innate thing. I don't know, but would it change that dynamic if there's a woman in it? Probably, absolutely.
Yeah.
But they're in touch with their feminine side. I have to say that. They absolutely are.
That's true. Spike Jonze, like, when he does the character, he exudes some kind of sweetness that mm-hmm. I always find, like, kind of, it always kind of catches me off guard, the way he speaks, Spike Jonze, when he's playing the woman character. But just in general, like, it's not a macho group in the way you might necessarily expect. I don't know. There is that sort of, like, high school attitude of, like, I'm going to put something gross in my mouth for attention.
Yes.
That's usually not the macho kid who's on the football team, you know? That's probably somebody who feels a little bit more like an outsider. And I kept thinking, like, in a lot of ways, it feels like a group of outsiders when you watch them.
Oh, yeah. These were definitely, like, you know, your skate punk kind of kids.
Yeah.
The weird guys. And even, like, talk about, like, NFL players. Like, in the third... in Jackass 3D, there's a skit where they have an NFL player just basically tackle them.
Right.
And they go down they're just down for the count because they're regular dudes, and NFL players are not regular dudes. They're gladiators. They're huge, like 300-pound, like, just machines. So it's the fact that they were even like, hey, look at this skit. We're just going to get pummeled by NFL players. And it shows that, like, we are not masculine in that regard.
Right.
So, you know, and even like in the first one with the kickboxer, it's like beat up by a girl. When they say girl, you can say, oh, that's not fair. But it's like, well, you know, no, she surely shows.
She really wiped the floor with
them. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So.
Yeah.
Lovely. Yeah. But I mean, even their masculinity, they're very in touch with their feminine side. They run around naked. Steve-O and Chris Pontius are like naked. Chris Pontius is naked a lot in the third film.
A lot. In the first film, like, a big gag is him kind of ripping off all his clothes and doing like a strip
party
dance. Party boy. Like, I don't find the skit like that funny necessarily just on its own, but when he grabs the security guard's hat and puts it on like it's part of the routine, that's just the perfect sort of gesture to drag somebody else into it, or, you know, make it fun in that way. But they are naked a lot in these films. I'm trying to think, it might be in the deleted, or no, it is in the third film or the second film. Oh no, I'm messing this up. But when they have the camera right next to a dick,
that's somebody, the third, like, one with it's like the close up. The yes, yeah. And it's close up, yeah. And it's going around peeing on people. Yes,
you know, there's dicks, there's balls, there's everything you can think of. So
and
there's
you,
a lot of
yeah.
Male
you
nudity,
never
yeah.
see that. You never see male nudity in like any film. Like even something like where everybody's always talking about Magic Mike. It's so sexy, and there's not a stitch of male nudity in that. Like a tiny, like there's somebody with a penis pump. It's like a gag. There's there's a lot of female nudity in that film. No male nudity, but yet this film is like a lot of male nudity, not in a sexy way, but I'm sure if you were a young man who is closeted and your parents aren't having it, and you know that's why you're closeted, you could get away and be like, oh, I'm gonna watch Jackass 3D. And they'd be like, great, you're going to be macho because you're watching this. And they wouldn't realize how the Jackass crew is basically allies to, you know, I mean, because they're doing all these things and they're like, yeah, we're going to be naked. We're going to do all this stuff. And it's totally cool to be naked with your guys.
Right.
So, you know,
there's one part where Johnny Knoxville has that t-shirt on that says totally straight with the unicorn and the rainbow.
I want that so bad.
Right. Yeah. Or, like, you know, I thought it was interesting, the inclusion of people like John Waters or, you know, Rip Taylor at the end of these films. I like it in the third one, especially him throwing confetti in 3D. But, like, it's sort of interesting, the inclusion of people like that who, again, like, you know, they're sort of icons and not associated with straight mainstream culture. Like, they're funny and you know, queer, or you know, associated with queer people. So like, it does kind of bring it into this other territory that's not, you know, like what you might expect of, like, from a group of guys doing stunts. If you just hear that, you might picture an environment that's very macho, again, like, you know, trying to outdo each other and trying to you know, act that way. But like a lot of the times they're not necessarily even trying to outdo each other. They're trying to like undercut each other or trying to undercut themselves, you know. It's I think that's part of the reason why it feels acceptable in a lot of cases, and it takes the edge off of the mean-spiritedness of some of it.
Oh, absolutely. Like, especially like with the John Waters, they call that the magic trick. He's like, "I'm John Waters, and this is the magic trick." And there's a lot in that that could be objectionable to like a lot of people, you know, because you could say there's a joke about obesity, there's a joke about a little person, whatever. But it's John Waters. The man made his career on being gross and being outrageous and being irreverent. So who better to do that? Who better to hang out with the Jackass crew than John Waters? So I mean, and he, I mean, it's hilarious. I mean, and everybody in that scene is having a great time. The woman is like game to do what
It's a big smile on her
she's
face.
so happy. She's like, this is hilarious. And everybody, it's a great little gag. And it works out because everybody's in agreement that we're going to do this ridiculous thing. And it is in bad taste, but John Waters has been in bad taste his entire career. So why not go to the next generation? And also, maybe some people who didn't know who he was would be like, all right, who's that guy? Look it up and be like, oh, he made a movie called Pink Flamingos where somebody in drag eats poop? All right, I'm going to watch that, you know? So.
Yeah, there's a definite overlap, I think, in the appeal, actually. Like, it does bring you into this sort of transgressive territory that's fun to be in. Like, it's not, you know, people can sort of pick it apart and say, oh, you know, who are the jokes at the expense of? But like, it is fun to not be in the straight-laced world, you know. It's nice to get immersed in that, which is partly what I think these films do.
Yeah, and it's interesting too with the like even Rip Taylor's inclusion, like how he's a very Gen X celebrity. You know, like I knew who he was because when I was like a little kid, I was like, oh, he's that funny guy who's like on some weird random game shows, you know, like, and I didn't know when I was little like what gay was exactly, but I knew he was gay. Like it was, you know, it was just one of those things. Oh, he's because like I had read somewhere in an article where it's like somebody had said like, what better way to announce you're gay without saying it but like throwing confetti at people, you know? And that's the thing. He's always been like the socially acceptable gay person because he's like, all right, I'm gay and it's not acceptable, so I'm going to be irreverent and be sort of fun and crazy and wild. And so I love the fact that it's even a nod to that, I mean, and in the last film, he was pretty old at that point. And he's still kicking around. He's in his 80s, so that's great. I don't think he's doing, you know, anymore, because I did hear there might be a Jackass 4. It would be great if he's in that at the end, but
I think it would have to be,
he kind of has to somehow.
but I don't. It's a little bit hard to imagine the Jackass 4 now, though. Like, that'd be fun, but it seems in some ways like they've moved on a bit, some of them. Or I don't know. You know, especially after Ryan Dunn's death,
Yes.
it seems like it would feel a little bit strange to have the group kind of back together, but not completely. You know, it's like, you know, when you see a band go on tour after like a major member has died,
Yeah.
it might feel a little bit like that. I don't know.
Especially since he did some of the, I mean, he did the at the end of the first one with the car X-ray. So that was a huge part. And my God, that's classic. That's a brilliant. I mean, the doctor, the way the doctor deals with that skit, how he deals with the whole situation, amazing. So yeah, he did a lot of, you know, very important stuff, and it would feel kind of weird. And it's unfortunate though when you read a lot of things about this, and people are like, they blame Jackass for him dying. And I'm like, no, that's not fair, because a lot of the guys on Jackass are not, don't have problems. Sometimes people have substance abuse problems, and sometimes they get in car accidents. I mean, it's unfair to blame this culture of the show on his death. I mean, people can make choices and stuff. So it sucks though. It's sad.
I mean, people have been really eagle-eyed on the show that since it began. You know, it has that very strong disclaimer, and you know, people kept after the movies. I think it's just a presumption that there's some association between what they're doing and, you know, maybe a self-destructive personality or behavior. You know, people can presume that, oh, like they must be connected when you watch it, though, like you said, that's not the case necessarily.
Yeah, and I just feel like, I mean, this is just like a Gen X thing, but I feel like this generation, my generation, their generation, is tends to be more self-destructive. It's a small generation. It was, we were always told, you know, it's better to be, you know, seen, not heard. You know, it was the last generation of kids who were kind of treated like, go away, be quiet, we don't want to deal with you. So there's a lot of internalized sort of hatred, I think, towards ourselves. And like in my own life, I've had a lot of male friends of mine pass away already, and I'm not even quite 40. So it's, I've seen like a lot of self-destruction around the men in my life. So I think there's just something about the Gen X generation that just isn't healthy and doesn't care about health or themselves in a strange way. And now in our middle age, so to speak, we're getting enlightened, because the younger generations are enlightened, are like, no, you don't have to destroy yourself. You can go to therapy or whatever. Like, you look at Steve-O now, and Steve-O is like an avowed vegan. He's an animal activist and all this sort of stuff. I mean, the guy's got his life together. It's a miracle he's alive. And I'm so glad that basically the Jackass crew helped him get clean. They institutionalized him. Do you know about that?
A little bit.
Yeah. So basically they called Dr. Drew from the Loveline, you know, the MTV, and they asked him what we can do. And they said that you can put you can call up the authorities and have them put somebody in like a residential hold for like 72 hours. And because they thought he was going to kill himself, and they went and they grabbed him up and scooped him up and put him in an institution. And he stayed and got rehab and got better. That's why in the third movie, they say when he drinks the sweat cocktail, that this is the first right. cocktail I've had in 2 years.
Yep.
You know, and it's kind of cool, too, when you see the fact that in the third film, he is clean and everything. And yet he's, you know, he's still willing to do the stunts with the same sort of gusto.
Yes.
You know,
some stuff you sort of think of people getting drunk to be able to do something like that. But I think it probably helps a lot just to have a group of friends like that, or a group of coworkers basically that, you know, can care about you, and, you know, they might pick on you, but they also care about you. I think you can see a little bit of that too. You know, it's that, I guess like a little bit of a brotherly kind of dynamic between a lot of these members, you know.
It seems like Wee Man is the one they love the most.
Right.
I don't know why. It just seems like with him, they're just like, oh, buddy. Like, they just like, not like they're patronizing him in any way, shape, or form. I think they just like him the best. I don't know. He must be like really, really cool guy. He's a sweetheart.
One of my favorite, it's maybe my favorite Wee Man bit. It's supposed to be with the card thrower. He thinks somebody's going to be throwing cards at him. And he's turned around and sitting on this chair, not realizing that it's wired for electric shocks. So every time he thinks somebody's throwing a card at him, he gets this jolt and he jumps up. And then, like, you know, magic happens. He said, okay, like, somebody's got a machine. Who has the card-throwing machine? And, you know, they're all losing it because it's such a ridiculous idea. And it might be Steve-O even who says, like, I would never use a card-throwing machine on you. And, you know, it's very sweet, actually, just seeing, you know, it's a prank on a prank, or a prank on a gag, I guess. And, like, his reaction and their reactions is kind of what makes that memorable.
Absolutely.
I was wondering if you have any favorite stunts or moments.
My favorite one, I think, of all is the rocket skates.
Okay.
Because it's something, like, I would do. It's something that's doable. And I know they say don't do it at home, but that one's, like, you probably would not kill yourself. You might scrape a knee or something. But, I mean, all they're doing is putting some bottle rockets. And it's hilarious because it's so easy. And all it is like, he's on an incline. And he just goes down, and then they explode. But I mean, I'm like, that's funny. I would totally do that. I've always wanted to do that. And like, we just had 4th of July here, and there's just fireworks everywhere. And I'm like, oh, baby, I could do that. But so that one is definitely one of my favorites, because I could see myself doing it, basically.
A lot of the best ones are the simpler ones. Like, it's not necessarily somebody being swung around on a bungee cord in a porta potty. Like, a lot of the best ones, I think, are, you know, a little bit more smaller scale, or like you said, things you can kind of imagine yourself doing. It makes it a little bit more relatable, maybe. I mean, some of the big ones are pretty impressive, and it's funny how, especially the ending of the second one, it kind of makes this connection between what you're seeing with these stunts and like old Hollywood spectacle. There's a big emphasis on the spectacle of some of these stunts, you know, that you're seeing something that's not even necessarily meant to be funny, like, so much as it's just meant to, like, wow you or shock you or leave you feeling stunned. You know, there's a couple like that. And I thought it was interesting, like, it might be in one of the behind the scenes or maybe in, like, one of the 1.5 or 2.5 movies, but Johnny Knoxville talking about Buster Keaton,
Oh.
being inspired by Buster Keaton. And yeah, like, at the end of the second one, there's a big reference to him, you know, with Johnny Knoxville standing while the house
Yes.
falls down, the facade of the house. You know, there's this big Buster Keaton homage. And just thinking about these films, not necessarily in a vacuum, even though they might seem totally unusual, but kind of connecting them to that tradition of stunt films and Hollywood spectacle, and even, you know, like Hong Kong cinema. Like, I was thinking of the emphasis on stunts, you know, how they'll build whole movies around certain stunts. And I think it wasn't that long ago, there was the Johnny Knoxville movie with Jackie Chan.
Which one was this? I don't know of this. How am I
I
missing
haven't seen
this?
it yet. I just know it came out maybe like last year or the year before. It seemed like a little bit
Oh,
like
okay.
that's a very logical pairing. You know, you have Jackie Chan doing these big, elaborate stunts in his films. I don't know. It's just sort of fun to kind of think where it might fit in with other movies, or how to connect it to other films.
Oh yeah, I mean that sequence at the end of the second one is beautiful. I
Yeah.
mean, oh really, the end sequences, that one is probably the prettiest, I think. It's like, it's the grandest, it has like, I mean, it's a whole production number, with
Yes.
all the colors and the dancers, and even like the part when the swimmers are like going down in a sequence like
Oh, the
above speed.
synchronized swimming.
Oh my God, it's great. So like the whole thing is just pretty, and then the way the third one, ends because they're throwing like dildos through the air. And that's funny because when you see that in 3D, it looks amazing.
It does look
And
amazing.
I remember seeing that in the theater, and I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. Like, I mean, and I'm not a person who likes 3D films. I find them, I don't know, like there's all these 3D films nowadays that are action films, superhero films. And I 3 hours of seeing something that's just like constant wall-to-wall action will hurt my eyes. And it
Yeah.
does hurt my eyes, and I don't see it enhancing anything. And it's funny with this because watching this, I don't have a 3D TV. So, and it's still really good, even though it's not in 3D. But I kind of was like, oh man, if this was in 3D, it'd be just like so much funnier. But it still looks good.
And like, a lot of the gags are built around that. Like, I think the stunt of Chris Pontius having his dick spun
Yes.
around like a helicopter, like, that was their test to see if the 3D would work. And, like, you know, it's thinking in three dimensions. So I don't, like, 3D movies. I think the one that really broke me and turned me off of that was the Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland, because I
Oh.
remember, like, the projection was kind of dim, and it had these big glasses on. So, like, when it's just even projected at, like, normal brightness, the glasses dim it quite a bit, so you're looking at this, like, kind of muddy, dark image. And, like, my eyes just started watering, and it was a long film. At a certain point, I didn't want to, you know, I left that not wanting to see anything in 3D ever again. But there's been a couple, like, I think sometimes the animated films, it's a little bit easier to see the 3D because, like, they're naturally bright and colorful to begin with, that you don't lose that much when you go with the glasses, you
And
know.
also length of time, I think, right? I mean, think
Yeah.
about it. Like a animated feature is about 90 minutes. The 3D
Yeah.
jacket is about 90 minutes because your eyes shouldn't be taxed like that for longer.
No.
Because like an ophthalmologist hate this. They're like, "What are you doing to your eyes?" Like you, so
Right.
it's not something that is. I mean, yeah, perfect length, 90 minutes. You can get through it,
Yeah.
and you're going to be like, "Oh, okay, yeah." So.
Like, How to Train Your Dragon in 3D, that was a good 3D watch. You know, like, I haven't seen it yet, but, like, I'd assume maybe New Incredibles, like, something like that's probably okay to
Yeah.
see. I think that one might be a little bit longer, but and all these Jackass movies are pretty short too. I don't think there's anyone that's over an hour and a half, right?
No, they seem like the first one's the shortest, I think it is, and then they go to both like, regular feature length 90 minutes, just
Yep.
about. Because I watched them all in the like the past week, because I had to like rent one from the library and stuff like that. So I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm like, I gotta watch these all, and they're great and they're entertaining, but watching them in 3 days.
And when you binge watch them too, they kind of, like, blend together a little bit. Like,
Yes.
after, like, I had a hard time thinking, like, which stunt was from which film, or it just feels like this big long thing. And, like, the only easy marker to think, oh, which one this must be from, is the quality of the digital video keeps improving. where you see like it looking pretty crummy in the first one, and by the third one, it looks excellent. You know, so it's funny to see that development. Like I remember when I first went to film school, people were talking, professors were talking, oh, the digital, it's convenient, but it'll never replace film.
Oh, absolutely. Everybody said that.
And then by like the time I was graduating, nobody was using film anymore. Like it died while I went through film school. Like I think I was the last, I think we were maybe the last class to actually learn how to use film. Like it died so quickly, and it was over the course of this, because like Jackass 2, that's 2006, and then 3D, I think that's 2010, right?
Something like
Or
that.
2000. So it was like while I was in film school, Jackass 3D coming out, that like you can see that it looks like a movie. It looks cinematic. It doesn't look like something somebody just filmed on a little camcorder or something like that. It feels grand and big and beautiful, colorful. So.
Yeah, when you think about it, I mean, at the time, yeah, I mean, because maybe that's why, like, my professor at the time freaked out so much because he knew at the time, I mean, digital video hardly existed. The only film that really, there were very few films at that time that were out. I mean, Dancer in the Dark was out at that point,
Yeah.
obviously. So, but then that looks, when you look at it, the digital video on that looks horrible. But it's the way,
And that's
like,
even like printed film too, on top of that, yeah.
right, and it looks really rough.
Yeah.
And so I guess in a way too, there's that snobbery of, at that time when we, you know, around the turn of the century, where it was seen as like digital is just this thing that's like, it's gonna be, it doesn't look as good, and now it looks just as good, you know.
Right.
So, and it's interesting to see that, like, how you, I was in the, still in that weird old end of the, we learned how to cut film and all that.
Yeah,
And,
yeah.
but you did that, but for you, it's sort of just a an antiquated, like, skill to learn.
Yeah, I still have boxes of film that they're
Good.
probably never gonna get used, but yeah, like it's sort of become a thing of the past, and like now it's the exception when a film's shot on actual film, and they try to make an event out of that, like it's oh, it's shot and projected in 70mm, but the digital, that's become the standard
Yeah, it
completely.
looks good.
And even the 3D too, like it's sort of funny. Like for a couple of years, it seemed like maybe 3D was actually just going to become the standard after Avatar came out, and there were a couple of these bigger 3D films. Like I think some of the best 3D movies came out like a year or two after Avatar, when they really thought about how to use it. Now, like for some movies, it's become kind of just like a standard. I go and look at the screenings for Jurassic World 2, and like a bunch of them are in 3D, and I'm sure nobody gave it a second thought. But like there were a couple of films for a while there, like the Judge Dredd 3D, or like there were a couple of these 3D movies where you can tell that they put some consideration into how it would appear, and they didn't even necessarily resist the gimmicky nature of it. Like Jackass 3D, one of the funniest things is starting off with that Beavis and Butthead sketch.
Yes.
And I remember that was like in 3D, when he smacks him in the face and says, oh, it's like I could actually feel it. It sort of acknowledges like, hey, this is kind of a gimmick, but just have fun with it and enjoy it, and it can still be beautiful. But
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
earlier you mentioned the YouTube
Yeah.
wave of films that seem sort of inspired by, or not films necessarily, YouTube videos that seem kind of inspired by this, and how they might be different, or how you think these films might be regarded right now.
Well, I mean, it seemed like, you know, with the kids, like, I mean, the younger people, I should say, like, on YouTube, they saw what was done in Jackass. They must have, known of it. And then just everybody has a digital camera on their phone now. I mean, it's super easy to, like, upload videos. I mean, YouTube's been around for a decade or so. So it's like anybody can do what these guys are doing. And apparently that's even why they pulled the show off of MTV at the beginning, because there were too many people imitating them. And you know, and so they were like, well, if we just put it in a movie, we can do what we want. It won't be on mainstream TV. But I see there's a lot of this sort of what they're doing, but they're pranks and they're stunts, but a lot of them tend to be pranks and stunts that attack other people or are hurtful to, you know, it's hurtful to other people, and they don't have this sort of, like, you know, like a jocular sort of fraternity of misfit sort of feel. And it's just like my page, like this crazy, horrible thing I'm doing. Then I'm gonna have to, you know, issue an apology, and then I'm gonna be right back at it with my 2 million followers. giving me ad revenue and all that stuff. I mean, that's, these people make videos so that they can put ad revenue on their little, so that they'll click right. on it. And there are industries that are like multi-million dollar industries of just young people doing, where they are misogynistic, they are racist. Their pranks and their stunts involve all that sort of stuff and are incredibly hurtful. And like, I'm not even going to name them because I'm sure people who have read the news know who I'm talking about.
Sure. I mean, when they were watching the Japanese segment in the first film, mm-hmm. like I immediately thought of the YouTuber who got in trouble
yeah.
when he was visiting Japan for being, you know, very disrespectful. And he's like a, you know, rich, rich guy who has like a huge fan base. Like, it's not just a out of nowhere YouTuber. Like, it was a big name.
Yeah, because he was a star. He was like a kid actor, apparently.
I think so. Like, he's got a lot of young fans, they were saying. But he went to the forest where people commit suicide. Mm-hmm. And he was making jokes about dead bodies. And he was, you know, doing some other things like that were just, like, you know, incredibly disrespectful. So, you know, it seems like there's, I don't know, like, there are certain boundaries that the Jackass group doesn't ever cross that a lot of people today do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, first of all, they never made any money. I mean, they didn't make money on the TV show on MTV. And I believe, like, the first two movies, they hardly made money. If they made money on the third one, that'd be amazing, too. Like, MTV was, like, tightwads, and they didn't pay these guys, like, anything. So
the budgets are tiny.
Yeah.
Like, you think of all the stunts they had to organize and, you know, having a crew like that, like the budgets were very, very small for all of these films.
Right. And so they had all, and especially even look at who they had on their crew. That's Spike Jones, mm-hmm. like on their crew. Mm-hmm. And I mean, while he was doing these films, he was making like Adaptation and Being John Malkovich. Those were coming out in conjunction with these. So yeah. And those were big budget. Very slick, and he's still hanging out with these guys doing their film stuff too. So, and that's another thing too, where you see how all of these people are connected. Where Sofia Coppola is connected with this crew because Chris Pontius is in her film somewhere.
Oh my god, I didn't even make that connection.
Yep,
that's true.
He plays the friend of the dad, and
right,
he just
right.
basically plays himself, just a goofy, like, hey, I'm a guy, whatever. Yep. But I mean, it just shows you like all of these people are all connected. So, you know, these big name people were working on this tiny little project, which Jackass was, and not obviously making any money off of it, but just doing it for the heck of it. I mean, you see that Henry Rollins is in the first film. They were doing just for the love of it. And it seems like what it's mm-hmm. being done now for is money. It's being done for money and ad revenue. And I don't know. I mean, when people are making entertainment, they want to make some money off of it, sure. But yep. it just seems like if you're going to do something, there should be some sort of purity to it. I don't know.
I'm surprised more of them haven't really capitalized on that YouTube genre thing themselves. You know, like, I don't know if some of them are just feeling over it or what. I don't know. But, like, you could imagine some of these guys being quite big on YouTube. But
I also wonder, is it because of the generational thing where it's like, the people who are popular now in that genre, I guess, that whatever this new genre is, whether it's on YouTube and stuff, mm-hmm. do they see it like as those are the old guys? Like, I mean, maybe there will, like, well, actually, no, they're Jeff Tremaine, the director. Now, this is already like a few years back now on Adult Swim. There was this show called Loiter Squad.
Okay.
And that was,
I haven't seen it.
Yeah. So that was with Tyler, the creator, the rapper, and his crew. And they were doing, and it was very similar to Jackass. Like, obviously, it's done by the same guy. So, and it was kind of cute, actually, which I was very surprised with Tyler, the creator, doing something cute that doesn't seem like him, but it was. And it was nice, and it was, like, well put together, and I felt like it was, like, baby Jackass. It was kind of nice. But that was also on mainstream TV, good budget, all that kind of stuff, and they weren't doing things that, like, people are doing on YouTube where, like, you know, I mean, God, some of these things I hear where they're like, let's make a homeless person eat, you know, nails and see what happens, some god-awful thing. And you're like, that's immoral. And yet somehow you know that they're influenced by Jackass. And for some mm-hmm. in their mind, got screwed up to think that they should do something like that. So when Jackass did screw with people, like in the first film with the rental car demolition derby.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's,
you know that immediately after they have to pay for it.
Yeah, that's hardcore. I mean, that guy could yeah. have had a heart attack when he saw that car come in like that. And, you know, but they mess with people, but in not in a way that guy was going to, like, be humiliated or hurt or whatever. you know, afterwards, mm-hmm. they were going to be like, hey, man, it was a joke. Here's all the money and more than that for your car and for your trouble. So,
right.
you know, I don't see a lot of cruelty. I do see cruelty to themselves in these films at times, but yeah, not to other people. And that's why I think it's palatable, not just palatable, mm-hmm. but enjoyable, you know?
Right. Yes. It's not like there's that same kind of ego thing. A lot of it is just them taking themselves down a peg, you know? I mean, even in very simple ways, like Steve-O's giant Steve-O tattoo.
Yes!
Like, you know, he sort of makes a joke out of himself. He ridicules himself. I think, especially, like, with a certain newer generation of people doing things that feel like they're in a similar vein, there's so much ego and there's so much... Like, there's a lack of irony.
Well, and also because...
If that's fair to say, but...
No, it's understandable,
I don't know,
but... because, I mean, everybody who was on the show had to kind of do it in a... how we used to do it, where, you know, that, you know, some of them came from a magazine from the skating world, like Steve-O mm-hmm. went to Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey, Greatest Show on Earth, Clown College. But then they had to just like make videos, send them out. Johnny Knoxville was a struggling actor who then decided to write a, like, he did the riot test, like the gear test where he went into the shooting range. And that was something he did previous to Jackass. And then they were like, oh, this is a cool idea. Like, let's do that. He was writing, I think, I want to say for Vice Magazine, don't quote me on that, but that's what he was doing it for. And, you know, you see a lot of even that sort of Vice thing where now they're the ones in charge, you know, like now yeah. they have the mainstream stuff. So now they're the older ones who, like, we've hit this point where, oh no, we're the ones in charge. How very weird, you know?
That always happens. You have this, like, small group come up and they all know each other and they all make it kind of big together, or, you know, doing their own thing and they know each other. But is there anything you wanted to mention, or did we cover most of it? Or...
I think so. I mean, I don't know which one of my favorite, like which film is my favorite. I want to say like probably the first one is my favorite, but number three is pretty awesome just because it's very like funny. I love the part when they have the jet plane and they're sitting yeah. behind the jet plane and they're doing that Maxell tape commercial from the 80s and then they keep going in front of it and like getting pushed back. That's hilarious. That's another one I would want to do. Stand behind right. the jet of an airplane and get blown away. That's funny.
That's a lot of fun.
So yeah. That one, it's either one and then three and then two. I will give it another try. Like it's on cable or something. It's not as devastating as I remember in my head. It was just that end sequence. Just,
yep.
And, but then of course the very, very end is a delight.
Yeah, the very end, I think you're right that it's the best of those big endings, like the whole musical number. I think that's really, really fun. But my favorite's probably number three, too. I think a big part of that is because it was the only one I've seen in theaters, that I kind of know how it looks on the big screen, and I kind of picture that when I'm rewatching it now, and I know I'm a little bit nostalgic for it. So
yeah, because I'm like, that's the thing, too, where I'll never see Jackass 3D in 3D again unless... Hopefully someday, maybe they'll show it, re-release it. Because that's expensive, too. When we look at yeah. how expensive 3D tickets are in the movie theater, it's like, what, $15 to $20 to go see a 3D film now?
I know, it's too expensive.
So, like, will this ever get a re-release in that fashion? Like, that'd be awesome, but I don't
yeah.
think so. So, like, I guess if you didn't see it at the time, you missed your window, which is such a bummer.
It's cool when they do... rep screenings of 3D movies. That happens once in a while. Like oh. it's usually right around my birthday, so I've gone a couple of times to go and see Dial M for Murder in 3D.
What?
And that's always lots and lots of fun. Yeah.
It was done in 3D originally? You're kidding. I had no idea.
Yeah, it was shot for 3D, Dial M for Murder.
Oh my god, I had no idea. That's, wow.
It looks awesome in 3D too, because like the way it's shot, it's like, I don't know, like it's not a film full of like a lot of visual spectacle aside from the giant, the giant telephone, but I know, I always think it looks really amazing in 3D. That's one, like, they'll show horror films once in a while in 3D, like, now that the technology, it's, like, a little bit easier to project them, so you don't have, like, the red and blue glasses, stuff like that, they'll sometimes show them like that, but just, like, newer films in the theaters, I never really get that excited.
Yeah, I think of, like, you know, science museums with, like, you know, nature documentaries, and I'm like, that's yeah. really cool, then it looks really amazing and I've learned something and all that stuff, but otherwise I'm just like, no. Maybe if it's some sort of, yeah, if it's another movie like this, which like where they use gags and things, like you said, with like a children's film with an animated film. Maybe I'll try it for an animated film next time. That'll probably be worth it then, you know? Like seeing if Coco had been in 3D, having seen that, it probably would have been just so spectacular and beautiful, even more beautiful.
That would have looked great in 3D. Or I kind of like, I don't know if you've seen the Jean-Luc Godard film, Goodbye Language 3D.
No. That's a new one.
Cool. Right? Yeah, that's one of his new films. And like, it's weird that there's like a 3D Jean-Luc Godard film, but he'll do stuff like offset the cameras aren't necessarily attached that he's using to create the 3D image. So you'll watch something in 3D and then he'll have one kind of turn on a corner. So you're seeing something different in one eye than you are in the other eye. It can be really disorienting and he kind of uses it to just mess with you and like just play around with it. Like that one's really interesting for just... I mean, it'll give you like a migraine, I think, okay. But it's worth seeing at least once in 3D. You know what? I've never seen that in 2D. I don't know how it looks actually in 2D. It's always surprising to me when you go and see something in 3D, how little of it's actually in 3D. Like there's parts when I've been in 3D movie screenings where like I've taken the glasses off just to give my eyes a rest and like the image looks more or less fine. Like nothing's really sticking out. I don't know. I think most films don't use it well, so it's just like an extra thing people pay money for that you don't get anything out of. I that's how I feel about it. But
yeah, it's kind of my feeling. Yeah, like it's like when there's like super IMAX, and I'm like, I don't care. Does the film change? Like, is it the same movie? All right.
Well, you know. Yeah, it's so annoying when like some films they'll have the IMAX scenes where they change aspect ratio.
Oh wow.
That drives me nuts. Like you wouldn't believe. Like and nobody else seems to care or notice. So, you know, you'll be watching Dark Knight or Transformers and it goes from sort of normal aspect ratio to like a big square IMAX image back to the 35. It drives me crazy. I can't stand it. Like especially when it goes back and forth between shots. It's not just like one sequence is shot in IMAX. It's like individual shots are. I have no idea why anyone thinks that's a good idea. Yeah. It's terrible. Michael Bay and Christopher Nolan, you guys cut it out. Please. Anyway, so I guess that's about it. So if people want to find you online, where can they look?
You can find me on Twitter, Liana Marie K. If you need nail polish, sorry, Canadian folk friends, I can't sell to your country. I'm barred by the government, but you're in the United States. 1898 House, that's my nail lacquer company. So, you know, I can do the 48 contiguous states, not Alaska or Hawaii. Go figure.
Sorry.
Hawaii. Yeah, I know. Hey, U.S. regulations. It's a weird government we got.
You've also been on Wrong Reel, like we mentioned at the beginning.
Yeah.
And you have some articles up on the Pink Smoke.
Yeah, and I have my own LMK Film Picks. It's a WordPress site. I haven't really written in a long time, but, you know, I write when I feel like it. So, yeah.
Cool. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thank you, man.
Do another one again before too long. And folks can follow me on Twitter at Movie Kistler, and the show's Twitter is at FlixWise. And there's a Facebook page. The website's flixwise.com. You know, if you've been listening, you know. And if this is your first episode, I don't know what to tell you. So until next time, take care.